Your headphones not working?
This is the longest intro ever.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a Hard Rain podcast. I am the engineer, Voodoo Chicken. Joining us tonight, as always, are our hosts, Morgan Preston, James Hennigan.
The engineer's job. I'm fixing the junction.
There's
box.
A little bit of a headphone issue going on over here.
We don't have any longer cord. I got to sit like this. All right, whatever. It's like an inch. Whatever. We got this. We're pros. We got this beautiful studio in downtown Seattle.
It is nice.
Can't afford an extra cord.
Anthony Robinson is also joining us on the couch. I'm going to get through this intro.
I'm going to
get all the way through it.
And I'm going to complain every step of the way.
And, of course, our very special surprise guest out of nowhere tonight. We bumped into him down at the Comedy Underground at the old open mic, Mr. Ty Barnett.
Welcome, Mr. Ty Barnett.
Hey.
Come on.
Hey.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's awesome.
This is a double header. This is our second podcast.
I know. You guys have been working hard tonight, man.
This is, well, you know, not everybody can sit around and talk for as long as we can. But
see, you guys are grinders.
I mean, we had a phenomenal podcast with Craig Cass. Now you got to top it. Do you have an impression?
No.
Okay.
All right.
Here comes the outro music, and we're done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming out.
So you have connections.
I have no impressions. I don't do any impressions. I learned a long time ago. Every once in a while, I do impressions to myself. but I've never had the courage to do them on stage. That's what I got to get over. Like I do it.
Okay, what's the impression that you do of yourself?
Okay. Hold on. Morgan Freeman, but only certain a scene.
Okay. What's the movie?
You know. Andy Dufresne. Not many people thought Andy would be this far, but he made it. That's close.
That's pretty good.
See, that's not as good as Daryl's, though. Daryl Lennox has a really good...
I do the same one that I stole from Daryl Lennox, because he has the best goddamn impression.
Right?
Oh, it's just killer.
Daryl's Morgan Freeman is fucking flawless. It's
nice. Well, that wasn't bad. So you did have an impression. We can keep the show going. We don't.
His impression was so good that I thought I could do one.
Nice.
We don't need impressions. You got plenty of material. I mean.
Oh yeah. You know what? Craig actually reminded me of a joke I used to do years ago. I totally forgot. Now I'm going to go back and listen to the tape. I'm like, man, that was You know, sometimes you get jokes that are timeless. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while.
But like, you forget about them because you keep pushing for the new stuff and new stuff, and then you're like, oh, I remember that joke.
But like this joke he reminded me of tonight would totally work with the shit that I'm talking about now. So I'm like, I can kind of throw that in as a nice little tag. So I'm going to go back and listen to it because it's actually, you know, sometimes people remind you of jokes and you're like, hey, that's the reason I stopped.
That's the reason I stopped
doing a joke.
So we talked about this on past episodes with like Lori Kilmartin and do you tape?
I'm taping more now because I'm trying to prep for something. So I'm like. To me, you need a time where you just kind of go up and do it, where there shouldn't be a recorder. It's kind of like you're just going up and you just want to. It's like a singer. I want to sing tonight. I don't care what I'm singing. I just want to sing.
Can you get it out of your head when you are taping, or is it always in the back of your mind?
Now it's better for me. Now I can hit record and I can be like, "Yo, cool." And then I remind myself, "Oh, thank God, I taped this." But before, I would be aware. You know how
there's so many times I'm like, "Man, I wish I'd have taped that." In fact, there's too many of those times.
But then when you hit record, though, right? You're like, "Fuck, I'm thinking too much about the fact that I'm recording."
That's what Hennigan says he does. I don't know. I think if you just keep doing it, at some point it'll just.
At some point, it just becomes, you know, like.
Does it help when you have other people do it? Like you have someone else press the, you know, use your camera.
Yeah, don't you have people who do that shit?
Yeah.
I thought you were a much more successful comedian than that.
Man, no. You know what? Here's the thing. I wanted to bring my video camera more. But it's such an elaborate setup with it now. So like the Underground has that one spot, which is cool.
Yeah.
But you got to get there pretty much early before everybody else set that shit up.
Right.
Hit the button. So the audio for me is cool. I just got to remember if I do any facial expressions, that's the only thing. But just hearing the audio sometimes.
There's some pretty incredible tape machines now. I mean,
on the phone. You can do it on your phone.
And even phones are decent, like compared to what we used to have to deal with.
Oh my
you can
God.
Set that there and you can actually.
You would
release
actually have to have a stenographer back in the day.
It was horrible. It would just like, be echoey and you hear like three people laughing because that's all the mic
picked up. I had five boxes of those goddamn little bitty fucking mini cassette.
And I would tape my act, and then on the way back to fucking Seattle from from Spokane, where the fuck is that town? Tacoma, huh?
Yeah.
Or wherever.
What are those
I'd
towns?
Try to listen to that shit. You hold it up to your fucking ear,
my God,
and then the batteries would die. And you still, all you hear is
the audio on that was horrible.
Just terrible. Man. I have 20 boxes of these little fucking mini cassettes. I finally threw them away and realized that science is moving in a whole different direction. Yeah. And we're never going to bring that back.
I don't think, but do you want to, though? That's the thing. I would not want
to.
Exactly.
No, you can actually tape something that is releasable.
No,
I mean,
but
literally,
on the other side of that, I have so many recordings that I will just never listen. It's just like my little archive of shame. You
okay,
know?
But see, like right now, like the engineering stuff, you know what audio levels are supposed to sound like.
Well, kind
no,
of.
He really doesn't. He's just
no, but no, but you know when it's shitty. You know when it sounds shitty.
Yeah,
and that's what we were talking about. Like with like, okay, now because Anthony, and how long have you been at comedy? Like,
almost 7 years.
Okay, so 7 years. You got to think about it. Anthony didn't come along. He came along on the phase out of the VHS tape.
Right.
We had to send into
which
Brooklyn,
you have to send, and then they wouldn't.
In the headshot, hard copy,
black and white. Your name has to be in
you
the.
You know
bottom.
How much these fucking cost?
And you buy them from Hollywood Photo. It was a buck a piece, and you send
but
them.
But it
in
was
Manila
still
envelope.
That's $2-3 every time you send one of them motherfuckers out. You know
have
they
to
look at it.
When you took a crate to the post office, that's when you know you were a dedicated comic because everything was a fucking package. And shit, this is going
there. It's a lot of work. It's actually become easier, so I'm
it's become okay,
so.
And this is what I want to ask. Now, I can ask you guys this because, you know, and I was wondering if it was just me, but Hennigan knows this because Hennigan's been doing it longer. The quality of comedy, am I wrong or has it gone down? Like the quality of what people consider good comedy and good comedians.
I think it's gone up.
Really? You think it's gone up?
Yeah, I think it's gone up, too, and here's why. Because there's a lot more going on via internet, where if you start digging, you find some stuff. We're finding the talented people, and all the bullshit still sloughing off.
Well, but I think on the other side of that, though, there's kind of like a signal-to-noise ratio issue going on, too. Like, there's a lot of noise out there on the internet because of the internet.
Oh, totally.
You know,
but if you follow the right stuff and are in the right freaking, you got the right feed coming down, you start to realize who's throwing out the good shit. If you follow anything that Rogan has, you find stuff. If you follow anything that's in that subculture, you're going to find the good shit. And it's maybe not mainstream, but it's becoming mainstream because of the internet.
Are you talking about like on the internet, or are you just talking about clubs?
I'm talking about, well, both. Well, we know the quality of what goes in the clubs is already, we know that's a given, right? we've established that that's a done deal. That's a wrap. It's not going to get, because you know what's
that's
scary
why the
about
clubs
it?
Are, that's why people are moving out of the clubs and the
that's
shows
what I'm
are
saying.
Exploding
right.
and
more,
other type of
right.
venues.
Stand-up comedy is always going to be about going to a club, though, don't you think?
And
stand-up comedy club, a club.
Not in the sense of just a venue, but when you talk, like, I still do love, right, I still love the idea of the comedy club. When I walk into the underground,
it's different.
That's what I'm saying. It's a handful of clubs that to this day, when I walk in, I still am reminded of when I first started comedy and how I was excited about being in here. But other times, you know, the way that you hear these bookers talk, the way that you hear that it's more about the numbers as opposed to what the quality of the show is.
Right.
And that's what I was asking, is that like...
Well, club owners and bookers are in like the food and beverage industry. They're not in the comedy industry.
And I think they're the ones that's fucking it up, because when you go into a room and you see how great of a room it is, it's a great comedy city, but you can tell that the audience has zero respect for what that venue is.
The business of comedy might be
the
thing you're talking about. It's terrible. Not necessarily the artistic part, but definitely the business. I mean, it's been known for years that comedy clubs have always had like shady, you know, things going on. I mean, there's a guy who runs a club back in Kansas City. This guy releases a book called Cocaine Cowboy. You know, this guy's openly telling people, I'm a cocaine guy. And, you know, he's a comedy club owner. You know, I mean, there are other examples of that, but a lot of clubs always have had that type of thing going on. You know, I can read countless books about this.
Well, I think part of the reality behind the business side of it is, too, though, a lot of times the comic's going to stroll in. He's going to want the ticket sales. He's going to want this, that. Mm-hmm. And so the club owner's left with, like, the food and the beverage, you know. And so the more food and beverage he can sell.
That's always going to be there, though, because there's the artistic side, and then there's the side that has to make a profit. And right. these comics want their money, and then these guys want their money. So you have to come together somewhere in
but
the middle.
But I think a lot of these bookers have sacrificed working with the comic as opposed to what they're doing, where they say, well, you can't sell tickets. No. There's a difference between you not being able to sell tickets versus you have to give away tickets. If you've built that in your head, like I'm telling you, I was in, I forgot what the city I was in, but it wasn't Portland. But I was, somehow the conversation came up that I'm a comedian, and the person was like, oh, you ever been to Harvey's? I'm like, yeah, I've been to Harvey's, great club, right? And the dude was like, hey, you want to know the secret to getting free tickets? And I had to pause for a second. He's like, and I was like, yeah, tell me, what's the secret? He's like, send them your email. And I'm like, that's it? He's like, yeah, we got, and dude, he said, we have drawers full of free tickets.
It's all paper.
There's clubs out here that do that, too.
Costco.
But see, that's what I'm saying. So to me, as opposed to saying, if you drill in these people's heads that I don't care who the fuck is performing tonight, I don't care who it is, we're giving you a comedy show. These people are going to be funny. They're going to do their job. Their job is to be funny tonight and make you laugh. They're going to do their job. Believe me, they're going to do their job. Pay the fucking money for it.
Right.
You may not have to pay $20, $25 for a whatever act, but pay for this venue. To even walk in here and get a ticket is going to cost you money. And people keep acting like that's an impossible thing
for people.
It's
because they're afraid, because that's been ingrained in them and pounded into them, and that's how the improvs do it. That's why everybody does it.
Hennigan and I were talking about this a couple days ago, about how, because I was talking about like comedy competitions, and a lot of time it's just an excuse to get a bunch of comics together that you pay to promote a radio station or whatever for free.
Yeah,
you know?
And everybody's making money.
And Hennigan was saying
one
of the reasons that happens is because comics do it; they allow it to happen.
And
you know?
The only way you can stop it is there's no way to stop it, because there's too many motherfuckers that need stage time, and are willing to do it for free. But if you just take control of it, and it's all in the marketing, it truly, that's the end of it. If you have good posters, good pictures, and interesting shit that people are like, I'd like to go to that,
they'll
pay for the ticket to go to the show. I've done it. You just have to present it to them.
It's kind
properly,
of a depressing
right?
outlook, though, because I almost would like to think that the material would really be the big,
totally,
the material's great, you don't need the marketing.
But they don't know the material.
These kids, they're funny, aren't they?
That's amazing.
But
I'm a dreamer.
But think about
Come
it,
on,
though.
People?
They don't know your material. The You're first there. Thing that they're introduced to is your poster and your face. You've got to interest them, right?
Look, sure you have a
mic. I almost wanted to tell Anthony to put on earmuffs. Like, you don't want to hear this. You're not ready for this. You're not ready for the cynical part of comedy.
You haven't been in long enough.
So you still love
it. Do you have a great poster, Tom?
We are the Freemasons.
You know what? I will say this. With the internet, like you said, with it being the way it is, and you having to promote, it has forced me to do things that I never thought I would have.
That are higher end profile looking.
Seriously, dirty things.
Dude,
he takes
honestly,
cold showers now.
You get... No, hilarious.
Just the way you said it. I've had to do things.
Dude, he lives in L.A. He does have to shower a lot.
Well, it's a fact. That it's just,
in L.A. they're talking about
that. They are on the computer. But listen, here's the thing. I've had to learn how to use certain programs to make better promo material.
That's what I tell comics that are coming up. What would be your advice? Learn Photoshop and Illustrator. That's what I tell them.
You make it look good.
That's the shit that matters out the gate. You have to present yourself.
Pretty colors, man. Pretty colors.
Yeah, but man, there's so many funny people out there that don't have access to like a
that's what
computer.
Oh, totally. But that's,
thank you, Hennigan. Exactly.
Where the fuck are these people coming from?
Yeah, but you know the
Let
people.
Let them stay there.
Look at the guy sitting over here with freaking merchandise and freaking guys making his logo.
Half the time
65
I see this guy's
years
got his
old
own shirt on.
And he's hooked up. His son's a
that's
graphic
what I'm
designer.
Saying.
I mean. But just surround yourself with people that know how to do it. That's what you do. If you don't know how, find some friends that
exactly.
do it.
Exactly. Right. That's
Come
what I'm saying,
team
man.
Up. I mean, look at Rogan's crew. He's got the guy that's a good producer, right?
Yeah,
the guy's
use your strengths. You
yeah, know? Grab all these guys that know what they're doing and freaking bring them into the fold and work together.
Yeah, but how many comics can you really get in the same room to work together for
like
an
how many comics
would
work with
time?
Phil Fox more than three times?
Well, I think we overuse that stereotype. How can comics work together?
But I think they
like
do.
Like herding
actually.
Cats, but every fucking show and every you know, writing group and all that shit. That's a bunch of comics working together. It happens. It, you know.
I think when you get in certain, it depends on the mix of comedians, honestly. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about this, about the Comedy and Magic Club, where, like, sometimes they do this show where it's like 10 comics a night, so the green room is full of comedians. And we were talking about, like, how certain comedians you just don't want to be around, period.
Right.
Just because their personality. And they were bringing up names of people that, like, yeah. And it's like, oh, this person can clear a room because nobody wants to be in a room with this motherfucker. So if you get a good group of people in the room that know, hey, everybody's here just to relax and just chill, that's awesome. I love that. I love being around creative minds and people.
Yeah,
that,
it's fun to hang out.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And that's what I said. That's what it used to be when I mean, because, you know, like I said, Hannigan, and you know how this is. It's like when it's a small group of people, and these are the people that kind of, like, we were honest with each other about comedy, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could tell another person if the joke wasn't funny, you'd fucking say, hey, man.
That's what I love about hanging out with comics. You can say anything to,
but
like,
it's right, only certain comics you can do that with, and it's still cool. You know what I'm saying? Without egos getting in the fucking way and shit. And that's what's rare. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But when you get that mix, I mean, we're the funniest motherfuckers to be around.
I think it happens a lot. I think that guys gravitate to their little level and then can kind of.
Right.
Well, one of the reasons I actually do comedy, not to get too philosophical, is to try to break down this whole, like, ego and this thick skin and this whole idea about, like, taking people seriously or getting all bent out of shape about what people say or think. Because when you're up there on the stage, I mean, we've all felt like 100 people suddenly hate us for no particular reason other than we just said something they didn't like or whatever. And it kind of makes it easier to just, like, not carry around this weight and this ego, at least I think. So, you know, that's why I think you bump into a lot of comics where you can say whatever you want and they're like, they're not going to get upset or offended. And, you know, a lot of them are actually even really honest and truthful. And they're able to say, you know what, you're right.
I know why you're sighing, though, because you live in L.A. There's only, like, certain crews. I mean, you are in L.A. where
the show business.
I don't leave my house in Los Angeles. I can tell you that right now. Because I don't have the same camaraderie with some of those. I got comedian friends that we're friends and we hang out. Mm-hmm. And we may go to a movie, you know, go grab a drink somewhere, but, like, it's not a lot of people like that. Whenever I come back here, I'm always out, and I can stay out to, like, whatever time it is because these are people that I came up with. So it's always.
But you see that in other cities that you travel to, don't you?
I see it in different cities, but I also see that the when you get to a certain point in this business to where you start looking at what the other person has, that's the difference between the comedians that still can stick together and hang out and the comedians that don't really do shit. Because that's why we don't have a comedy union. You know what I'm saying? That's why there's no union.
Comedy union.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We don't have that. Like, there's an actors, there's a Screen Actors Guild, there's writers, directors.
You can get on in
fucking
under some
plumbers. Plumbers.
There's some some little union that we can get involved in, I think, that's now joined up.
Man, they've tried that shit, and I'm going to tell you, dude.
I just heard that actually there's not a trailer park in Florida where all the comics go to retire.
There's not?
No, that crushed me. I mean, I'm ready.
You're devastated.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, there is.
You're
no
saying that the comics couldn't get together and do it, or you think they should have that?
But I think the core reason why is, like you said,
they allow it.
They allow it, and again, and if you, because again, these clubs, and I hate saying this because, like, people, they always make it sound like it's something against the clubs. No, I'm just very pro comedian. That's what I am. I'm not. I'm against anybody that takes something that they can't do and exploits it. You can't do it. So for the simple fact that you can't do what I do, you should automatically have more respect for me than
you
what
mean
you're
like,
showing.
You like they shouldn't be doing the whole $25 to get on stage and that type of shit?
Yeah, because again, either that or say, you know what? You brought these people here. They bought food and drinks. So here's some money just for you doing this, period. When Terry was running Giggles, man, and that dude wouldn't give you shit, even if you was hosting. He wouldn't give you shit. Like, he wouldn't give you a free drink, nothing. I'm like, you got these motherfuckers driving from Tacoma, Lakewood, or whatever, you know what I'm saying? And you don't give them a fucking drink? And whenever you get people, if they have the same thought, you can shut those type of people down and be like, okay, you're right, here. Here's some money. Here's some gas money.
There was a dude recently doing a local comedy competition that numerous comics had gotten fucked over involved with this dude. And when it came down to everybody's like, you know what, fuck off, you've pulled this a couple times, there was still people that went and did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had to pay. They had to pay to get into the competition.
No, hence the reason why I say there will never be a comedy union.
Yeah, so it's,
well, I just actually heard a great story yesterday about Doug Stanhope. And I'm a huge, huge Stanhope fan. And I was told, I think Paul Hooper was telling me, he said he like opened for Stanhope somewhere at some club. And Stanhope went on stage, and apparently the owner of the club wanted to take 30% of the merchandise, like anything he was going to sell.
Oh, I've had that happen. Silver Legacy.
No, but no. So Stanhope goes up on the stage, and before he even goes into anything, he starts talking about it. He says, "Do you know the manager of this club wants to take 30% of any of the money that I?" And then he calls the guy up. He says, "Why don't you come up here on the stage and talk to these people and like let's work this out. Let's talk about why you want to take." And like, I mean, that's what the dude is fearless, man.
Because a
lot of comics would be like, you know what, I want to work here again or whatever, you know. And then and he just doesn't give a fuck.
You know what though?
Man.
But this is a huge United States. It's huge. It's massive. And there is tons of places and restaurants and clubs and venues that are not comedy clubs. You can call them up, and they are excited to have
but
you.
But the other side of that coin is how many times have you heard a story like that where, like we were saying, the comics allow it to happen a lot of the times.
Right.
Now, here's a guy who went up there, and he's like, you know what? I'm not.
What ended up happening? Did the guy pay him to like take the percentage?
Well, I didn't hear the end of the story. Who knows? I heard that the guy, obviously, he came up on the stage and being put on the spot, didn't really know what to say or do.
You know what? That almost to me is worth now. Now it's worth me giving you 30%.
Oh yeah,
now it's worth
you
it.
Earned it.
Right.
Just come up and
at least fucking rob me face
right,
to face.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know what? Here, take this money. Take your blood money, man.
I didn't know it was that fucking dire for you. Exactly.
The three T-shirts.
Do you guys think that the internet may change that as far as comedians actually working together?
I think it does to a degree already. I think there's more.
I think it makes it easier for comics to work together because they're able to reach out and find each other a lot more easier than they used to be. You know?
I've been able to help.
I mean, that's just one long fucking comedy thread after another.
I'm not on Facebook, though, man. I'm never going
to
get on Facebook.
I've been able to help friends, you know, on the internet. Just, you know, they
I've
go
actually
to Chicago.
Seen it work pretty well. Surprisingly, I thought it was going to be stupid, and then I've used it as a support system in different situations, and it's pretty incredible. I mean, the way that you can talk to people.
No, it's awesome. I think the only drawback to Facebook sometimes, if I ever had to think of one, would be everybody's thread.
Everybody, there's no filtration system.
Like if I could just say I don't go to raves, I don't go to
I just cancel them if I
book
readings,
I just
follow the right
I don't do any of that. So don't send me anything that is a thread.
I'm not in the Midwest.
Exactly. Yeah. Let
I'm
me
not
going
to go to a show
there.
In Gotham fucking city. Ain't gonna happen.
But we friended them. Befriend them.
Exactly. So I feel bad. Like I want to like. Even if I'm not going to go to the event, I'll click maybe.
So you feel pressured by Facebook?
Like, I told you I might come. Yeah. I didn't say for sure.
And don't confirm that bitch that got one friend.
So now there's maybe and there's like on Facebook. Like you can maybe now.
Yes.
How many emotions are they
the
going to go through?
That
like,
maybe.
Okay,
I just
kind
want
of.
People
like,
just want a thumbs down. That's all I, there's never.
You
like,
unlike it?
No, I would like a thumbs down on some of those.
They don't
the unlike.
Not button. Yet.
No,
just a
just
thumbs
like.
Up. It's like when they put the 19 firefighters died. It's like you feel kind of funny pushing the like button.
Why do you feel funny pushing the like button?
You don't like that
don't
shit.
Like
you don't want people to think
I'm not
going to
give it the thumbs up.
Right.
Awesome, dead firefighters, thumbs up.
Wait, wasn't it more like a memorial? Like,
it just happened. It just feels funny, and it's just weird. It's like, give me a fucking, I think this sucks button.
It's counterintuitive. Right?
I like to like those things, you know. My grandma died. Like, you know.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
It's a form of sympathy in the, on the Facebook world.
I mean,
I guess
put it on Facebook. But
you could take that too many ways. That could be like an asshole move. Did that guy, do I know that dude? Why did he like that?
That's what Anthony does all day. Right, he just looks for people he doesn't know that have deaths
days.
In the family and he just
likes
them.
Like. Yeah. Oh, your great uncle died? Like.
The
your
other
cat
part
shit
of,
on your rug? Fucking yeah.
The other part of Facebook that is weird is the cyber bullies.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like oh my God, it was so bad when the Zimmerman thing went out, man. Everybody posted something. And dude, you find out how fucked up people are.
Oh yeah.
When they know that there's a profile they can hide behind.
Oh, that's what all it is. It's their little freaking warriors behind the keyboard.
It's amazing to me. Like people were writing shit, and I'm just like, and you know, sometimes I don't want to get caught up in, so like, I'll write my opinion, and I'm like, boom, and then, you know, I then put it in caps.
Suddenly you're fighting from Nancy.
I really mean it now.
I got into an altercation because of that. There was a comedian that came out today, and because I fucked with him on Facebook, he was really angry at me. His name is Crank Williams, right?
Now we're naming names.
I know, Crank.
You know. And,
he's a crazy motherfucker. That's what you got to understand about Crank. He's just, if you know that going in, then you just
shit. I went up to the guy and, you know, I was introducing myself. You know, I wanted to humanize the guy. Maybe he's not such a, you know, maybe he's not that crazy or whatever. And then,
no, he is.
With a name like Crank, though, I mean, what do you expect?
But see, he was mad because I was making fun of him on Facebook. He posts things, and then sometimes I like to say, hey, you're wrong. And then just
watch the chaos ensue, right?
And then
you admittedly provoked him online, is what
you're saying. Yeah, absolutely. I have no shame about
that. That's blatant misuse of the internet.
Yeah,
sure.
You need to.
I mean, I took a break from porn.
I think on both sides.
You got a lot of growing to do over there, Anthony. That's
I know.
I told you, man. Is the thing, once you get to a certain point where you just, because again, when that came up, I wrote my little opinion, said what I had to say, and then like you said, sometimes somebody will say something that'll go too far. Where I'm like, yo, and one girl wrote, she said something like, "You need to wake up, Ty. Get do the program." Which to me didn't sound like it was regular conversation. Like now you sound like you know
me. Right, right.
And now I can't really let you say that. So I say, hey, you need to watch your mouth.
Bitch.
Oh, that was, you know, that was a capital mistake right there. I'm sure the avalanche came.
But I said it in a way to where I'm like, because I know it's the other people on this stream where I'm like, that's the weirdest type of thing to walk into this room and everybody else is in this room now in the same conversation. And you just like, you don't want the fucking vegan on the side to be like, yeah, I think he sounds abusive. Those caps sound abusive.
And that's why I'm not on Facebook. It just seems like such a bizarre.
But you just don't even have to get into that, though. You just don't get into it.
But man, it's hard to have people with idiotic opinions.
But if you're gonna jump in there, just remember that you're gonna waste part of your fucking day.
I do not like it. Shit. I do not like it when people hide behind like a profile or whatever a screen name and then say things. And then when you see them in real life, they don't say anything.
No.
And these are very real opinions, by the way. It's not like it was, you know, bullshit. Either, you know, like it wasn't like it was just zeros and ones. They were putting together words that was meant to be offensive or meant to be, you know. So when I see these people in real life, I always keep in the back of my head, you said that. Why don't you own up to it as a person? Because that's how I was raised. You know, you confront the person that you have conflict with. So
yeah, but you understand, man, when a person is able to write whatever they want to write and they behind some screen, and that's the thing. If you really want to know how people really are, read the comments of the posts that they go on Yahoo. Mm-hmm. And like, no, and I used to do it on purpose just because I was going through some shit. I said, you know what? You know, sometimes you're like, fuck it. I want to direct this anger at somebody.
You
fuck
just
this.
Start some
I'm
shit.
I'm looking for it today. But then I had to stop because I'm like, man, people write some fucking hurtful shit.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I think part of it is that people, there's no filter and there's no, like, they don't understand how to write that shit. They're just spilling it out of their fucking head without thinking it through where they would if they were face to face with you.
We used to do this shit online 15 years ago when this internet first started, right? And there would be people so hostile that they're going to jump in the car and drive to Tennessee and fucking shoot you in the face with a shotgun, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And I mean,
those are my favorite kind of threats.
Oh my God. It's crazy shit.
That still happens.
I unplugged from that one.
He's like, I'm not going to be on the lesbian boards anymore.
Well, that's actually how I met Rogan, was on his message board. And this was like, I registered a long time ago.
Well, Louis C.K. was on that one, and Stanhope was on that one, and a whole bunch of people. It was like 15 years ago. Bunch of fucking people. Wow. And it just got bizarre.
Yeah, I registered like,
oh my God,
12 years ago or something on his, like, it was a long time ago. And people were really visible back then because I was like the 400th person or whatever, and only like 20 people posted with any regularity.
But is it your real picture on your post?
You know what? For a while there, like, every, it was, When Rogan first got the Fear Factor gig, at the opening of every Fear Factor show, they would have the contestants like with their shot, and usually with their shirts off or whatever, but it'd be like cut off right. Like right below. A bunch of crazy people like started changing their pictures to like these Fear Factor style profile. Like so for a while there, a lot of people were actually and right now it is my real picture that I think about it. Yeah, so. I mean, everybody, it's hard for me to not be known in that environment just because, you know, Rogan's put me up a couple times and it's been filmed and taped and put on it. But the point I was making was people still, like, you know, threat, like, I'll drive, you tell me where you're at. I'll drive three states to, like,
fight you. And it's
weird. And sometimes, like, there's a whole culture.
Some of these people will, too.
Well, and there's a whole culture of people who, like, their whole purpose in life now is to just encourage that type of reaction, you know, to just see if they can
convince
somebody.
Just these guys trolling and just pissing people off. So, I see dudes that do that all the time. It's kind of funny, actually.
I go out of my way to troll people, but I'm selective. I troll homophobes, racists, you know, those kind of
people. See, that's where you fucked up, too, is that the shit that Crank's writing is right out of his fucking head, and it's real. A lot of dudes are just in there just to start shit.
Well, yeah, but you know,
he's
the
not starting shit. He's fucking.
Well, he starts things sometimes, and then also if you try to correct him or try to help him, it's not like I don't think the guy can be smart. It's just that when you say dumb shit and then you get called out on it, and someone's proven a point, own up to it. Just be like, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I'll learn.
But a lot of people don't go on the internet to get corrected.
Exactly.
Hey, you know what?
On top of that, dude, you got to think they're not just telling you they're wrong. They're telling everybody else that was in that conversation.
And so now you got to defend yourself.
Well, and that's I'm comfortable with that because I.
Or you feel like a dipshit.
No, but
if
you, maybe they're not comfortable. Maybe that person is not comfortable with admitting defeat. In the cyber world.
If I fuck up, I just back out. I'm sorry, I fucked up.
Here's an even weirder perspective on the psychology of the type of people who like start these altercations on the internet. With Rogan's message board, he's like the big freedom of speech kind of guy. So he didn't ever want to outright ban anybody from his message board. That's what normally happens when people on most message boards, they start shit, they're drama queens, whatever.
Right.
People are just like, we're done with this, we're going to ban this person. Instead, like Rogan set up a special like sub forum that has limited permissions. Like you can't post in the main forums, you can't search, you can't direct message or communicate with other members. It's kind of like jail, you know. And the weird thing is, like, you're basically telling
you can go there and just talk shit, but you're not allowed with the other people.
Yeah,
until
and so
you're
that's
good
and
for
so
a
that
while.
And that's the weirdest thing. Like these people are basically being told, like, hey. You're
a
part of a community that does not like you. You've been segregated. Wow.
And
the funny thing is,
there.
They come back. They stay. And people also, like, since I'm an admin, they always send me these messages like, please delete my account immediately. Like, they can't just fucking log out and not come back. You know, I get it all the time. Like, delete all my posts and delete this account, and I am outraged.
But, dude, I bet you they have a secret pride that they're, like, halfway banned on the Rogan board. They're known for something.
Well, that's the other crazy part is a lot of these people who, like, and occasionally some people do get out of hand and they do just get, like, outright banned. And so they start these little subcultures elsewhere, like on Reddit and other, like, where they have little, like, we were banned from this message board. So now we're, like, a little, it's the weirdest fucking, like.
It's a community. Yeah.
Who
it's
has that kind of time on their
they
hands,
do.
Man?
Yeah.
It's crazy,
weird.
Man.
Well, dude, think about it. This is where you can go on any subject. If you needed to fucking fix the heater core in your Volvo, there's four videos right now. I can pull up and we could do it. That's the type of shit. Like, everything's there.
And then right after that, we could watch a dude blow a horse.
Awesome.
Yeah.
See,
so, I mean, the good with the bad, dude. You're going to get the bullshit, but then there's all.
Tomato, yeah, man. Exactly. Both of them are informative. Either way. Either way, you learn something, you know.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, man. I think, and that's why I say, that's the good part about the internet. That's awesome. You're like, and especially with YouTube, you can post your thoughts. You can go create anything like this. You can go make videos and make your own channel.
And some people are doing amazing shit if you really
do. And that, see, that part is cool. But I think, honestly, it's been more people that have been doing bullshit.
Oh, totally.
As opposed to, and that's what I'm saying as far as, like, if you went on YouTube and they put, like, I remember, and I hate to say this because it's my kids, but my kids were like, because we got into this debate about comedy and stuff, and I think, how to say, and only your kids can say stuff to you that that other people would probably not be able to get away with. And we were talking about videos and stuff like that, and so we got on the topic of YouTube hits and this and that, and they wanted to show me the cinnamon challenge. That's what they wanted to show me. They say, hey, the cinnamon challenge. There's all these people. For the people that don't know, it's these people that it's just a video of people eating a spoonful of cinnamon and watching their reaction.
And shit.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So my kid's like, yo, you got to see this, daddy. You got to see this. And they showed me this one person. It's a comedian. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember her name, but she's doing it. And so I'm watching the video. And I'm just watching it. And I'm like, I don't get this. And so my daughter's friend happened to be there. And so she says, oh, your dad doesn't think it's funny. And both my kids says, well, he doesn't like anything that has more hits than his videos.
Oh.
So, wow. But again,
you're
like I said,
that's true, right?
But
it's
again,
like, what's this bullshit?
But I said, you know what? These are my kids again. It is what it is. In my mind, I was thinking something like, you know, you're lucky you're my kids otherwise. But I say, okay, I tell you what. No, let me show you what I'm talking about, the difference between comedy, whatever. So I put, luckily, that same person that was doing the cinema challenge that my kids were laughing hysterically at, we pulled up the video of that same person doing stand-up. My kids didn't laugh once. And so when I went and showed them a video of mine, I said, you hear this? That's laughter. That's laughter. That's laughter. I said, that's the difference. So it's not that I hate YouTube. It's just more like
there's less quality control.
Give me some shit where I can look at it and be like, yo, that's no, hey, you can't argue that, man. Yeah.
You better watch out, though, because that dude's going to take that cinnamon act to the stage.
Right?
And
then
and then he's going to be on the Tonight Show.
He's going to kill.
Yeah. Exactly, man. But see, that's what
He's got a cooking show now on the food chain.
He took over Paula Deen's old spot.
Cinnamon man.
But see, that's what I'm saying. And you know what's funny? That's even totally possible. In today's society,
probably inevitable.
It's totally possible.
Oh, there's so many people that are celebrities now just because of some stupid shit they did on the internet
but
for 30 seconds.
But then there's people
seconds,
that are famous because of amazing shit they've done. So you just weed through it.
I'm trying to contact Betty White to make a sex tape. That's what I'm doing.
Wow, there you go.
That would blow you up.
I hope it doesn't make you feel uncomfortable that I would watch
that. About Paula Deen? What about Paula Deen? Let's bring that motherfucker in.
Oh, my God.
She's down to about $10 million a year. Oh, I feel pretty bad.
And you know what, dude? That's what trips me out when people have that kind of money to where they still have millions.
The empire
is
crumbling.
Feel shitty.
And she's crying on TV
every
day.
You feel bad.
Because she wants more. Everybody wants more.
Let me tell you something, man. More. Look, first of all,
Rachel Ray would have never said, nigga. That's all I'm saying.
Well, or she wouldn't have said it around people that would have said something.
She's smart
about it.
She's smart. She knows when to smile.
Hey, man, you got to know who you can say it around. First of all, that's when you find out who your friends are.
First of all,
somebody in that room was like, no, watch this.
What'd she get in trouble for, though? Admitting to it before? Why'd she even say shit?
Well, she said she said it because she was raised to...
But why did it even, how'd it come up?
Because
I think a lot of people that worked in one of her restaurants that she came in would hear her say that shit all the time, too. Like, she'd go back in the kitchen and just nigga
she's
this,
being
nigga
sued
that.
By
she got sued by somebody. Yeah. Her corporation got sued by somebody, and they alleged racial discrimination and sexual harassment.
Right.
But,
got it.
Did you see her Today interview? Did you see her Today Show interview? You got to watch her Today Show when she's really crying.
She says she got mugged by some black guy. And
she's like a gun with, yeah, she's like, she was loose. First of all, let me tell you something. And this is, again, if I was white and in that situation, I'm going to tell you the exact detail of why I used the N-word. I'm not going to fucking, she so glanced over like a gun was to my face. So everybody was like.
Really? That's not a good time.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right.
That's not a time to bring that up.
I'm like, what did this person say to you?
Right.
I mean, because the gun in my face would have been way more.
Exactly. Right.
Wait, like, that would have been the last time I would have been derogatory in any way. I would have said everything
so
nice
she
to that
cries
person.
And says she got
Martha
robbed.
Stewart would have never had this trouble, man.
Commitment.
She went to prison. She knows what's up.
No, I think Paula Deen probably called that dude the N-word and he fucking pulled a gun out on her. That's the
way that
Okay, so to me, I'm like, well, when those situations come up and these people start losing their money, it's been so many examples before these people that it's all gone wrong for. Like, no one has ever profited in any way
except
from
for the one person that gets away with all of it and it never touches Stewart. Is Alec Baldwin. No, she went to prison. Alec Baldwin can do anything. It's just his part of his deal.
Part of his deal. I saw
that's his character.
What did
something.
He do this time? What
he
did
said
he
some shit about some gay
homophobic thing because
his boss
right.
His boss.
But he makes really good Capital One commercials, man.
Everybody loves him.
30 Rock was awesome. I love
everybody loves his character, loves the dude, and that's part of his bluster.
Well, Well, I saw an episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, you know, that Seinfeld online thing he did. And what's that guy's name? Michael Richards.
Yeah, he went and got him, and they talked about it. Man, it actually was pretty.
He's a broken dude, man. Like, I don't know if you've seen it, like, when he sits down and because that's the only
it's
time.
It's a good episode. It's
yeah,
the
man.
Episode
he's like, he's
good.
Burned by
he's
that
a
bad,
rich,
you know.
Rich,
well,
broken
that,
dude.
That's yeah. true, too, you know. Yeah. But it's just weird to see him talking because he's like, I'm never doing stand up again. And he realizes that he fucked up, but it's just weird to see, like, because that was years and years ago.
I don't think he's hated as much. I think it's gotten a little bit less on the dude.
No, man, let me tell you something. You know why it'll never get as less? Because whenever he gets on TV, whatever journalist is going to mention that.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying.
It'll be like Michael Richards, Seinfeld.
If he just slowly moved to fucking somewhere in Maine and bought a little cottage and fucking
in Maine, he's a hero.
You know what
in
I mean?
In Maine, they got a statue for him. You know,
he was on an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm with J.B. Smooth fucked with him. Like, it was on an episode. Yeah.
But like, Bill Murray, dude, he didn't do anything, but he just lives off in some freaking weird place and
but
has an answering machine.
Bill Murray has reached a level of that to where he's almost like Jack Nicholson where, hey, come on. You hear like Jack Nicholson grabs some chick's titty, like that's Jack.
I think he's actually allowed
five titty grabs this year.
Five titty grabs.
He's allowed five titty grabs.
Probably any once.
Right.
Yeah, these guys. Yeah, they're at some point they're just iconic.
Yeah.
They become like a parody of themselves. I mean, they're literally like other people can do better impressions
like,
of them.
Sam Jackson's getting close to that. Anything you hear Sam Jackson do, you like?
Yeah,
hey, man, that don't sound weird. That sounds like Sam Jackson, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody else, you're like, hold up. Hold up. Will Smith did what? You know what I'm saying? So it's way different, man. But I think when you get, but you have to be at that point, though. Mel Gibson learned. Mel Gibson learned. Right. You're not at that level yet.
If you're going to be a racist, you better have a lot of money going in.
That's right.
Because it's going to hit you right in the
pocketbook.
That's right.
You have to be fearless.
Mel Gibson has a new movie right now, though, right?
But his thing, and that Passion of the Christ thing, it worked out for him because he financed it all and he made all of that money back. Yeah. So,
right.
And
but
Hollywood
I mean,
was like,
what's the new movie? He's in something like very recent he's doing, like a Quentin Tarantino film or something. Which
he's
like,
always doing.
Well,
so
Django Unchained 2. this time it's Jews or whatever.
I think they did Jews. They already did the Jews. The
Inglorious Bastards.
Yeah, that's been done.
But it's Jews on a plantation this time.
See, so people get mad like they were getting mad at Tarantino for that, and I'm like, that's how people talk. Then I'm pretty sure. Like I don't think they were very politically correct.
How mad?
It probably wasn't as historically as accurate as it could have been. Like I mean, the Mandingo fighting. I don't know, yeah. But you know, at the same time, we watched that movie because we wanted to see Jamie Foxx kill a bunch of white people.
Yeah.
In that
and
time,
the thing
so.
Is, Quentin Tarantino seems to be able to get away with anything as well.
Oh
dude, look at all his movies. Over the top as fuck.
Well, no, you know what? No, you know where? I'm gonna tell you. This is the one because in that movie, for some reason, as many N words was in it, which is I don't know how many,
like 100 and something.
Right? It was over. It set the record.
Set the record. They win. They won.
You gotta go, man.
There's no one coming close to that record soon. But as many times he said it, you know when it bugged me, Pulp Fiction.
That's right, because it was out of context.
Yeah, it was like had nothing to do with anything that was going
on. When was it in Pulp Fiction?
When he, remember the dude got shot in the back of the car, they had to go to the house to get cleaned up, and they took it to his house. It was Tarantino.
Dead nigger storage?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought that's why he wrote himself into that movie.
Just so he could say
this white guy wants to say the N-word.
That's
probably it,
and
actually.
And it's just stupid, because it's glaringly uncomfortable for no fucking reason. Look. You're not an actor, you fuck. You're a director. You're a horrible actor.
Exactly.
Get the fuck off the screen.
He needed to get his
Give Johnny Depp a fucking shot. Val Kilmer needs some work.
Val Kilmer disappears.
Hilarious.
Kevin Costner.
You know, Val Kilmer, though, I think Val Kilmer, when he did, what was the last thing he did that was really
The
Tombstone.
Doors.
Batman
the Doors.
And Robin.
Tombstone.
Well, Doors was the last thing he did that was good, though, right?
The Doors. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, wasn't he in Heat? He was in Heat, right?
But in Tombstone,
Al Pacino and Robert De Niro?
Yeah, he was in Heat.
You know what I just saw for the
first
time?
Then he got really heavy, and then...
What?
Carlito's Way. I saw it the first time I saw the whole movie of Carlito's Way.
I don't remember that. I've seen it, but I don't remember it.
Al Pacino.
I don't remember the movie.
Yeah, it was more like a love story. I was surprised. I was like, damn, I thought it was gonna be like it's a gangster love story flick.
It's like West Side Story in a way.
Yeah, of. Fucked up ending though, man. That's one of them things where you're like, damn, I kind of wish you would have made it through. I'm excited for the new Star Wars movies though.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams, you excited for that?
I didn't see Star Trek, so I don't really know his work.
Yeah, well, you should see the first one.
He made Star Trek. He brought it back right. So yeah. I mean, if he's the guy that's doing it, Star Wars.
You don't think he'll fuck it up?
No, I think he'll make it edgier.
Yeah. Speaking of that, this new Superman was good.
Was it? I haven't seen that yet.
Isn't this the one where they took his underwear off?
I don't know about that.
No, I'm just saying with his uniform.
What theater did you see this in?
Superman.
What theater was this at? What was it on Capitol Hill?
Superman or Super Duper Man?
I'm just saying. Superman, whatever. Crying game.
Like,
I just thought they changed. Like there was a big controversy because he's always got the iconic underwear on the outside of his thing.
It's a goddamn imaginary motherfucker. Did Jesus wear a thong? We don't fucking know.
Hey, I'm not the one who was upset about it. I'm just saying.
I'm upset now.
I read something somewhere about that, you know, and people were upset because they're like, you can't, you know, take Superman's underwear off like that. And I don't know nothing about it.
Now I got to go research some shit I didn't want to
know about. I don't remember any underwear taking off scenes.
There's not a scene in the movie.
I've heard it was good and I've heard it was bad. There's people on both sides.
I can't say it was bad. I'll put it to you this way. It's the best Superman movie since Superman 2.
You know what though? In my world, saying like something's the best Superman movie is not really saying a whole
lot. No,
I'm just not a big fan.
You didn't read any of the comic books
you got to look at it from two different perspectives. Look at it from the perspective of a kid watching it, because that's how I remember Superman as a kid watching it. I know now you look at the special effects now, cheesy. We get it. But the idea of that movie was cool. And then you look, because now you look back, like you said, Superman 3, even though I think Pryor got a bad rap for that movie, he wasn't bad.
No.
It was a shitty script.
That's the only one worth watching because Richard Pryor's in it.
That's why I watched it, because of Pryor. But people give him shit for that.
I laughed just because it was ridiculous. And Prime.
Yeah.
They say that for the toy, though, too. They say that for the toy. And I'm like, the toy, Brewster's Millions. I just watched Brewster's Millions the other day.
That's a great movie. It's an awesome movie. There's an old version of it that's really good as well. It's black and white. Go watch it. I can't even remember. It's like, I don't even know.
Oh, that's right, because $30 million was the big number, and that's when they did a remake. They made it $300 million with Pryor.
He had to spend $1 million to get $30 million.
That's right.
And then he couldn't marry. He just came back from war. He couldn't marry the chick because he had to spend the money.
It's Brewster's Millions, right?
Yeah, it's the original one. It's good too.
Did you ever see Silver Streak? I think it was.
Gene Wilder, man.
That's another a classic, man. Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite all-time movies, man.
Gene Wilder movie though.
Young Frankenstein is fucking hilarious,
dude,
man.
I just saw Young Frankenstein for the first time like a year and a half ago.
For the first time, a year and a half ago.
Man, I had to have them pause it. I was laughing so fucking hard. Yeah.
Gene Wilder's great in that film.
They say
too,
the girl's name in the
and
horse
knees. Who's the guy with the weird eye?
Eugene Feldman.
Yeah. Pryor had a show on NBC for a while too, right?
Yeah, the Richard Pryor
very
show.
Briefly, and he was doing sketches like the first black president, and this is way back.
And
like
Rocco
Urbisi
directed that show. He was the producer and director of that show, who was also Carlin's producer.
See, that's what YouTube is good for. Seeing old shit like that.
There's a lot of it.
You can see a lot of that Pryor stuff on YouTube, man. That's where I saw those.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of those guys just didn't translate. Well, Carlin did a TV show, but it wasn't really. This is the weird thing.
But his children's TV was good. He did children's television too.
Thomas the Train.
Well, here's something that I noticed too is like it seems like a lot of comedy doesn't really have much of a shelf life. You know, like some of that stuff from the 80s, the 70s, whatever you can look at, and it's maybe it's not relevant or just doesn't seem funny anymore. But some of that shit, like Pryor, that's why I brought
the
Pryor sketch for the first black president because that shit is relevant. You know,
there are certain shows from back in the day, sitcoms, that you watch them now, they are still
Watch the Bob Newhart show and just watch it from the beginning episode all the way through.
Brilliantly. You know what? I'm not ashamed to admit I'm a huge Bob Newhart fan.
Okay. Well, that was a bad example. Three's Company is decent to have.
Three's Company is only funny because it's so fucking bad and it's so white and it's just
Watch the Flintstones. Like Anthony and I were talking. Well written.
The Three's Company theme song, like that's even how white people talk, man. It's just like that's the most annoying fun.
But you got all right, man.
It's television, man. It's furniture.
But see what?
It's atmosphere when you walk into the room that those noises make you remember how fucking awesome
it was. I refuse to believe that Three's Company is like something that you can let me just say.
Every time I see Three's Company, I'm sticking that fucking song in my head.
Strokes is a great show to sit and watch. And
Different Strokes is cool. The only time I didn't like watching Different Strokes was when I was watching around somebody that wasn't black, and they always kind of looked at me.
You know what I'm saying? See, that's why I enjoy Django, because I got to reverse that and look at white people.
They would always look like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah.
But it's not close to Django and Different Strokes in the same.
I wonder how many.
It's kind of like fucking Different Strokes.
I wonder how many subtle little racist interactions were caused just by Different Strokes all over the nation. Yeah. Right?
Guilty pleasure, Alf.
Now you're just
I liked Alf. I liked Alf.
You've lost all credibility.
Alf reminded me. I'm not saying, because first of all, it's not the same comparison because the writing is so much better on American Dad. But Alf reminded me of the alien Roger. Roger is the funniest thing on American Dad.
It's like Milton Berle. That's Milton Berle's voice that they're copying.
Okay.
It's like a really over-the-top gay Milton Berle.
Dude, but he's super.
Totally.
But that's what
listen
I'm saying.
To
so
that when, and then when, listen to some Milton Berle.
When I watch Alf, and I'm like, man, they always gave everything they wrote for this. Everyone else had the straight lines. Alf was the only character that had the funny lines. Same thing with like Wings. Cheers.
I like Wings and Cheers. I like all those shows.
Cheers.
Wow. I'm going to tell you, dude, it doesn't get enough credit. Like, some of those shows are really, the callbacks in them.
You remember when Arnold got molested by the Maytag repair guy?
No, and I hated that because I hated the Maytag dude after that.
That's during the time period where everything was an after-school special. Well, we had to watch Little House on the Prairie. I think he was even on Little House on the Prairie.
All in the Family.
Oh, man, I was...
I just watched CNN.
Raised on like really bad like 80s TV.
Did they just show you the really fucked up episodes?
They stuck in my head, man. How can you forget? Like, okay, All in the Family, right? First of all,
which was an excellent show.
Archie Bunker and Edith and all those people. But do you remember who were the next door neighbors of the Bunker?
The Jeffersons.
Yeah, the Jeffersons, right? It's Edith.
There was a spinoff.
Yeah, and it's Edith's birthday, and so everybody goes next door to plan a secret like birthday surprise party for her, and they leave her in the house alone, right?
Okay.
So, and this is a real episode that aired. I made Anthony watch this, and it scarred him for life. So all of a sudden, there's a knock on the door. Guy shows up.
Oh, I don't want to hear it.
He's a plane. No, you got to hear this. He's a plane. Come on, it was on national to ABC or CBS or whatever. How bad can it be, right?
Oh, man.
So this guy knocks on the door. He says, hey, I'm a plainclothes police officer. There's been some reports of a strange man in the neighborhood. And so she invites him in, and he starts describing the guy to her, and he's describing himself. And all of a sudden, she's like, oh, you're not a police officer, are you? And
then it goes black and you
So he starts saying all this weird shit and making moves on her, and there's the audience is laughing the whole time because this is like a sitcom, right? So they don't know what to do.
Right.
And this is taped in front of a live studio audience, and they obviously didn't know that this is going to be the rape episode or whatever. And so there's like this awkward laugh, and they're getting more laughs than like I get on stage, which maybe says something about my comedy, but it's like the rape scene, and there's like laughs every time and it's the weirdest freaking thing ever. And of course, it's averted at the last minute, and everything ends well for Edith.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I thought
it's the craziest thing ever.
But it was implied, like the implication.
Yeah, the weird thing is,
so he didn't actually do it.
No. Well, of course they couldn't, you know, go that far on CBS.
I was about to say that show took a whole other turn after that point.
It was dark. Right. Well, here's the thing too. Like, and then Arnold's getting molested by the Maytag repairman. All this shit was happening back then. But then the thing is, the very next episode. It's like it never even. It's not like in this episode Arnold needs therapy for being touched. It's like no. It's just like back to what you're talking about, Willis, and everything's.
They tried to make it like Tom and Jerry, where Tom gets blown up and then the next frame he's fine.
Right.
All right.
Dude, shit. Good.
What about Emmanuel? Anyone watch that? The other one with.
Webster.
Oh, Emmanuel. Yeah, Webster. Oh, Emmanuel Lewis Webster. Yeah.
That was a big thing. That was a big thing. Black kid, white family.
Yeah, that was a very '80s thing. We just need a black midget to make this family come together.
They were like the white. An adult.
He can't be an adult black kid. He's not gonna like Jimmy Walker's not getting adopted by the whatever the family was from which name.
That show is that show on anything? Hulu Plus or anything?
You know, TV One but TV Land brings all of those shows back.
I'm sure everything that's ever been on is on again. Somewhere.
Except for Gilligan's Island. Where's that at?
You know what, man? I'm gonna tell you, dude. I wasn't a big Gilligan Island fan. Like I would watch it. But it wasn't a favorite of mine. I'd always just be like, okay, it's on.
You don't remember Dobie Gillis.
I remember it, but never watched it. You know what I was a big fan of, and I didn't watch it as much as a kid. I watched it when I got older, and now every time it comes on, The Twilight Zone.
Oh, it's great.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. Old school Twilight Zone.
Yeah, not the one they brought back in the 80s. I was like, ugh.
No, the Rod Serling original. There's even Alfred Hitchcock is good as well.
That was good writing.
Oh.
That was good. The special effects, now, you look at it like,
but it was black and white, so it had the creepy vibe, so it was cool,
but
whatever.
Really good writing in that,
well,
man.
These days, the television shows, the writing is an afterthought. Like, all of these shows, like, it all started with Lost, I think, where they would just kind of, every show would have a hook, but there was never, like, you knew these writers didn't have an end game. Like, we're just going to keep doing this until people lose interest. So, okay, now there's a new twist, and now there, and it never comes together. And then finally they're like, okay, people lost interest, so we're done. Here's the final episode. Yeah. We're out, you know? Like,
I hate it when they don't have a final episode to, like, certain shows. Like, remember, like, certain shows would just be off. Mm-hmm. Like, well, they had an ending to Moonlight, and Moonlight was, they had a finale to that. But, like, certain shows, you're like, damn, it's just not on.
Did Night Court have a series finale?
That was another good show. Night Court was good.
And Newhart, the other Newhart, where they were out at the little bed and breakfast that they were in.
Yep. Mm.
So that had one of the best endings of all time.
Columbo. Every time Columbo comes on, man.
Or Dragnet? Do you watch Dragnet?
No, I wouldn't really like
Just
Dragnet.
Just the facts, ma'am.
But the thing I liked about Columbo, dude, is that, like, they told you who the crook was at the beginning. And you just had to watch this dude get more and more annoyed with Columbo coming back saying, just one more thing. And, like, you realize, like, this dude knew. Like, I always look now, I look for the episodes, like, when did he know that it was this motherfucker? And he just said, I'm just going to bug this dude for the rest of this hour. Then that's a good guest star. It's like you see, like, young Richard Hamilton. No, it was George Hamilton. Mm. You know, like a young Betty White and shit.
When you mentioned Twilight Zone, William Shatner's in a ton of those.
Yeah, you know,
Robert
who else was it?
Redford.
Robert Redford. What's the dude that just died from the Jack Klugman?
Oh, yeah.
He did a bunch of them, dude.
And that old guy from... Burgess Meredith.
Oh yeah, Shelley
Berman was in a few of them.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, Shelley Berman was in and I remember he told me, I met the dude in Vegas, and I didn't even know who he was, and Travis knew who he was, and Travis was like, "Yo, that's Shelley Berman," and he's like, "Yeah, he's been on this and this," and
now he's on Curb Your Enthusiasm, right?
Yeah, yep. Whoa. So that's what I'm saying. See, no time, no shelf life. In this business, man, look at that dude. He's collecting Social Security and he's doing that shit.
Yeah.
It's awesome, you know? But yeah, I say it was all, those shows are better than they are now. It's too much reality.
You know, earlier you said you're working on something, you're preparing for something.
Yeah, man. I'm shooting a special August 2nd, and it'll be my first special since the Comedy Central one. And I didn't really, to be honest with you, I didn't really. Plan on doing it. It was just kind of like a friend of mine was like, he showed me the special that he shot and he said, yo, we can shoot one for you. We can get it.
It's going to be like a DVD or is it
going
to be
on network? We're going to Showtime.
Nice.
Showtime with it. But again, like I said, it was one of them things where it kind of fell into a position that I was able to do it. Like I worked my ass off last year so I can prepare for this.
Where are you going to shoot it at?
I'm shooting it at a theater in like West Hollywood.
Like, yeah, what's Hollywood? And the more details come out, then the more I'm going to release it. It was just, I didn't realize I was doing so many other things that I hadn't focused straight on stand-up. So I'm going to New York for like a week and a half, two weeks.
And you're just going to work out on the mics?
Just tell jokes. That's it. Just hammer it out. And like tonight.
How often do you come to Seattle?
I'm up here. Well, my kids are here, so I always got to be here.
How many times do you go up a night in New York?
The last time I was there for a week. I went up like three times a night. Each night. Every night I was up like
21
times
a week.
Dude, and the thing is, you can hear the evolution of the joke.
That night.
From one set to the next, man. And I said, you can't, if you're going to train. Anywhere.
You have to do show. Well,
how long are those sets when you go up at like four times in a night?
If you're lucky, they give you a good like 8 to 10.
And do you do the same 8 to 10, or do you like?
Nah, well, how I did it when I was there, because I taped something for Nickelodeon, so I had to prepare two separate things. So I had to prepare like a clean TV set. So I had to throw in some of the stuff that I will do on the special, but then I got to kind of mix it up with some other stuff. So. It was more like, well, I would do one set. Like I said, I would start out like at the comic strip, and I know the comic strip has a certain kind of crowd. So I'd be like, let me do these jokes here, make sure I knock these out. Then I'd go get a late night set where I knew I could do some of the other material that I want to do on the special, where I'm like, all right, cool, let me throw these jokes out for these people. So I kind of did double duty in trying to figure it out. But for the most part, when I go, it's easier for me just to, like you said, just go up and just talk. That's it. And just figure out where the set's gonna go.
So you write on stage a lot?
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it. I mean,
yeah.
How long did that, man? I can't do it. I just can't do it. Like, how long did it take you? Like, is that how you started? Because Hennigan was telling us earlier that's kind of how he started. He would just go up there and start talking.
But see, Hennigan's a different animal, man.
He's an alien.
Let me tell you something. Hennigan's the only person I know besides Tony Daniels that naturally they're just funny naturally. Like they just go like. Like, for me, like, on stage, my personality on stage is what it is. But when I'm off stage, to be honest with you, I'm not really trying to make people laugh. I'm just kind of like, yo, I'm here. Hennigan and, like, Tony, those guys, like, whenever I would watch them perform, I'd always be like, man, like, I don't ever think I saw Hennigan prepare a set.
Yeah.
Like, he just goes and he talks, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? So... It's definitely possible for people like that. For me, when I started, I kind of was like, all right, let me go ahead and put this structure together. I'm good. Let me put this structure together. Let me put this together. Let me put this here. Let me do this here. And then I would have my notebook. I would listen to the set. I would do this. And then after a while, when you get comfortable, you're like, you know what?
How long is a while?
Man, shit, I've been doing this like 15 years.
Well, I mean, is that how long it took before you got comfortable writing on stage?
No, you were about to. Dude, I've been watching you. What are you like... Seven, eight years in, you started like.
Yeah, that's when I started relaxing a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? That's why I said, like, Anthony, this is a good time. You know, so 7 years in, like, you still believe in it. It's still awesome. It's a beautiful thing at 7 years.
I'm at a point now where I kind of do it like Hennigan does. I don't really go up there with a plan.
Yeah.
I know where my bits are.
Do you ever feel like you just kind of failed spectacularly because of that, though? Like
that's the best part, though.
Yeah, that's...
It makes you go, oh, fuck, and then it
is that really the best part, though?
Yeah, because
you don't feel it's the best part when it's happening. Yeah.
But your brain will kick into something else because you have to save your shit. You have to save yourself. You have to pull the nose up or you're fucked.
Right.
So then you come up with something.
And see, those
sometimes
people,
it's good and sometimes it's
bad. You're never going to save every one of them. You're never going to fucking pull it off where it's 100%. Right. But I mean, you know what I mean?
But see, that's what I'm saying. When you got people that know how to work a room, like they don't, like, one of the best examples to me is Yoshi. Yoshi to me, and I don't know if you know Yoshi, Asian, Japanese comedian. And the thing with Yoshi was, even when he thought he was bombing, it still was funny.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he would even, whatever he said, it still seemed funny.
Even if it was comments about the fact that he was bombing?
Exactly. So, like I said, so certain people that know how to use that situation being weird and flip it to where
Brody
now
Stevens,
it's
Stevens, another example.
Who?
Brody Stevens.
Yep, Brody, yep, another.
He's just got such a strange off-kilter
that it doesn't matter. Anything can happen.
Nope, and that's what I'm saying. So, if you get that kind of vibe, you never really bomb. You never really... You just have sets that didn't go exactly how you wanted them to go. I think for me, though, I knew that I had to have some kind of structure to at least have a base But once I had that bass, I'm like, okay, cool. I can go up here and play around with shit. If it doesn't work, I can go to this joke, pull us out.
Because you always have a net. You have shit that no matter what, you can always just go to.
Yeah. Right.
That's what makes riffing and improvising so fun is that you know that you have a standby.
Yeah.
So, like, you can just put
off. So you make some comment about how fucked it is and then look like a pro by sliding into some shit that's going to fucking kill it.
That's
then
right.
They're like, wow. This guy does know what he's doing. And then they feel like they're in safe hands, and they'll let you get away with almost anything at that point.
See, that's the thing. That's the key. You got to get them to – once you get them on your side, man, it's you can riff a little bit more because, you know, it's your personality. How long you been doing it?
3 or 4 years, not that long at all.
Yeah, but, dude, I see that you're starting to get more comfortable with it as well. I mean, you start to be able to make comments when it's not going well and when you can start doing
that. What are you talking about, man? It's always going well when I'm up to
No, but I mean, you have an instinct where if you have to recover, you can.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing all right. I'm learning, I riff still, and some of my best sets have been just, like, goofing off. Like, lately, all the open mics I've been to, I haven't really repeated the same shit as much as I can avoid it.
But, I think people are more impressed, like, when they see you in the moment, you know, rather than, like...
Well, there's something about the delivery, too, when it's, like, spontaneous
because
like
it's
that.
Real. It's not, like, something that's been said over and over and over in front of a mirror. It's an actual reaction that's funny, and then it surprises them, and it surprises you, and then everybody's fucking happy.
And it also seems like the crowd is always willing to be a little less judgmental of how funny something is if it's instantaneous. Right. If it's like like they'll give you more room, they'll laugh a little bit harder because it's like that dude just thought of that.
I think they feel like they're in on something.
They go apeshit because they saw the act of creation.
Right.
They saw something being fucking created out of nothing, and that's always amazing, no matter what the media.
Right.
And I think sometimes with the repetitiveness, especially when you at like 3-4 years in, I think you need that. I think some people is bad. The only time the repetitiveness is bad to me is if you have established your solid material and you refuse now
to move off
of that and go on and say okay, because once you get your act, every comedian, you have your act. You have your road gigs that you know these are the solid heavy hitters that'll work. The people that get stagnant and the people that are never. Like, you never see him. Like, I still like watching Hennigan. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll watch him because I know whatever's going to, it's going to be funny. It's not going to be some bullshit. 9 times out of 10, he's going to riff off of what's going on right now. Mm-hmm. It's funny to me. So it's always something that's fresh. As a comedian, I want to see it. Right. Whereas some people, I know exactly what they're going
to
do.
So you don't need to stay in the room. You just go out.
Yeah, you just go.
I can't stay in the room.
Yeah, you go and you come right back when, you know. And that's the thing. I think that's the difference when you get your solid shit, and that's cool. Or like I said, if you're working on something, I totally get that. But if you never want to grow, if you never want to talk about like I can't talk about the same shit I talked about when I was like 25. I don't even do that shit anymore, you know?
Well, there's 100 different muscles. Sometimes you're working out for a TV set where you have to be in this amount of time, and it has to fucking hit every point, and they got applause breaks and all that bullshit. And then you have to work on the set that works in the fucking bar.
Right.
And then you got to go over here to the comedy club, and then you got your theater set. It's a bunch of different shit to work with.
Yeah, I guess I just more or less right now feel like I'm not even really working on material as much as I'm working on just like being up there and interacting with the crowd,
yeah,
you know,
practice.
And just like hanging out and like trying to like, you know. Because
you're playing with house money right now, man. You're playing with house money right now. This is, let me tell you something, man. And people don't want to believe it. They think I'm bullshitting when I say the most. And I got to categorize this. The most fun I've had in this business was when I first started doing comedy. That's the most fun I had.
Because there was no pressure.
And it's new, you know.
But everything that you did was so, it was so simple. The biggest thing you were worried about was getting some pussy. That was it. That was it, dude. I'm telling you, we would go do a set, and the first thing we'd be like, we didn't even ask about the money. We'd be like, you see how many chicks was in here tonight? You see the chick? Was she laughing? Was she laughing when I did the joke, man? And that's it. But, like, now, you know, you get to this point where, like I said, you get older, you realize then you got to think about down the road, and you got to think about you're not going to want to be on the road the same amount of time.
Do you do a lot of road gigs?
I do. I don't do as many club gigs. I was doing a bunch of colleges and select clubs last year, and then I started doing these other things, like these acting projects, where I'm like, okay, well, if you're gonna pay me this much for a commercial, I'll take it, you know what I'm saying?
But it's
yeah. Which ones did you? I saw you on something recently.
I just shot a Toyota, a Dunkin' Donuts, and then I'm about to shoot another
one
this
week.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. When you get to a point where you're like, these are great, but like I know when I walk into the club, there's no feeling that is that fucking awesome when you see a room full of people
that are
right there.
That
and
instant
there's none.
Feedback.
It doesn't even. And people think it's bullshit. Again, let's take the idea of, because people ask like, oh, well, your act, that must be exciting. It's not exciting. It's rewarding. That's the best word to describe. It's rewarding because you are doing something that is helping build something that you're working towards. But exciting, no, it's a lot of sitting there waiting. Do your thing. All right, cut. Yeah. Do this. You know what I'm saying? Blah 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 blah. It's like even like with this right here. Like people see, they see certain cameras and they see this and it's cool, but they don't know once you go edit this, you mix this down,
time.
You do
yeah.
this. It's a bunch of shit. It's rewarding. That's what it is. So with clubs, and this is what I tell people, man. It's you can love the artist stand up. The business part of this is fucked.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
It's fucked. It is so fucked to where it takes some of the joy out of doing. And I hate to be this dude. I really hate to be this dude.
Does
man.
It almost not make sense to get into it then? If
no, no,
the
no.
If it's
see,
that fucked?
No, no, no. Because again, that's the part where I say you have to have a love for it. Like I love performing. Like I can't.
But there's another side of it that you just have
well,
to deal with.
I don't know if it's love as much as it's even like a compulsion or an obsession. You know, I mean,
hey,
I
put well, this
what is love but a compulsion?
Yeah.
And it gets getting all philosophical.
What's the definition?
That's what he does. He sits back. He's brewing on some shit that he's gonna drop.
I put it to you this way, man. I cannot walk. I can't even. I don't even go to comedy clubs if I'm not going up. I don't go.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I don't want to be in there watching somebody else kill. I can't.
Do you watch a lot of other stand up online and videos and other people's stuff?
I watch people I know, and then I watch people that someone says, "Oh, okay, hey, check this person out."
Or these guys are blowing up. You always got to see who's coming up.
Yeah.
I watch them. Yeah, I watch them just to see if it's worth it. Like some people, I watch. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah, and there's some guys that are that you know, if you give it a chance.
Well, you asked earlier. Do you think the bar has been lowered?
Yes.
And I don't think so. I think it's just so many more venues and so many more outlets and so many YouTube videos. And
but see, that's what I'm saying. The YouTube videos alone has lowered it because. You factor in that the club owners are saying, well, we don't want to pay this kind of money for these people that are experienced and that are going to do this job, and they want more money because they are experienced. We'll take these people and give them this gig.
We'll bring in a bathtub and a cat.
That's it. Exactly.
Some of that is there, but
oh,
the other side of it is that we're also getting older, so we have to change with the times. You got to stay young. So you have to pay attention to how that stuff works.
No, that part, then, but that's the marketing part you're talking about. That
yeah,
part
but that's
is
videos on YouTube. That's learning how to make shit go viral and
right,
how to
but
get
what,
your stuff out there.
But that has, but that's that doesn't have to do with the same thing as the business part of it, of them saying, okay, Morgan, look, we saw your videos. They're funny. We know you've been doing this for 20 years.
Right.
We're cool. This is how much money we're going to give you. Oh, you don't want that money? Okay, cool. We'll give it to the guy that has just as many hits for doing this, and he's been doing it 3 years. And he'll take it.
Right, but here's the other side of it. You also, if you have any kind of a fan base and you are getting views and you have a following, Dane Cook and all these guys have proven it, you can go out and sell your own venues out. You're
and that's
why
I think more comedians should do that. As opposed, and that's so to answer your question, I'm working towards doing more of those venues where I book the room, then whatever we sell is what we sell. Because clubs, like I said, when you deal with clubs, you're at a club for like 4 or 5 days. They've made most of the money. You've made a fraction
Stan
of
Hope
that.
Is out doing it right now. Rogan does it.
We saw Joe, Carlin. We saw Carlin. He fucking rented the room. He did the promo. He collected the fucking money, and he went home with all of it. And
that's the best way to do it, man, because clubs will keep you there for a week. They'll put
well,
you in
that's
a shitty
business.
Condo.
That's a business, and they don't really, for the most part, they don't give a shit.
No.
We're just comic A, comic B. They don't really have that love of it. It's what brings people in, and they
that's
buy
it.
Drinks, and they buy food, and it, of course, it's about the money. We're drug salesmen. We sell beer and alcohol,
that's right.
basically.
But see, that's what I said. I get what you're saying, Morgan. I totally get you. You're right in the sense that we do have to evolve. We can't be dinosaurs in this and just feel like it just has to be about the jokes. You have to get the jokes out there. I totally get that. It's just, I feel like, the best way to put it, I feel like too many people are considered headlining comedians.
It's too many people that are considered that.
It's not, and that's not fair to the venue or the comedian.
But what do you do? You can't fight it. So you just have to really focus on your own shit because all this shit is noise. I mean, they're going to get paid whether you fucking don't like it or do like it. So
you can get sidetracked being, well, goddamn, they've been doing it 2 years and look where they are.
There's a bunch of people that I have a very hard time, and I won't say names, but I've had to give money that I was like, Jesus Christ, really? I got to pay you that. And they didn't deserve it. They like 2 years in.
And see, and that's my only thing.
The only thing is you can just get bitter thinking about that.
No. Because to tell people, bitter to me is when you feel like you can't do it yourself. That's what bitter is to me. Like if you feel like you can't go do that, then you're gonna hold on to those thoughts like that. But like you said, if you can go, you can rent the venue.
Yeah, there ain't no fucking bottleneck. You don't have to go through any of these.
You can do whatever you want to do,
dude. There's even Brown Paper Tickets is a phenomenal. Like Stanhope uses them. I use them a ton. They have a comedy liaison that you can talk to via Facebook and get with, and they're totally all about helping promote you. And they're nationwide, so you can find out where they're pretty heavy and say, hey, promote my shit on the front of your site. They want that
stuff. And see, that's the type of shit right there where I'm like, that helps further comedy. Whereas some of these clubs do what they can to diminish what comedy is. And that's my only point.
Just go to them. See, here's their problem. There's not enough comics
going to them.
So there's a ton of, anybody that knows can go to them. And let them know that, you know, and it's not a bad thing. They're going to vet it a little bit.
That brings the internet back into it, too, though. Yeah. I mean, like Louis C.K., when he released his last, not his last one, but the I guess one before that, he released that on the internet. Yeah, a quick $1 million, you know, no bullshit, no rent venues, no nothing, man. He just put it online.
He sells everything on his website straight to him as all his money.
We're starting to do that. Honestly, my friend Robert's doing that. He's finding independent venues. He's looking at Central Cinema right now, you know, or Columbia City. So it's starting. I think we're all starting to catch up.
Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm all about that. That's why I think the comedians now, that's the advantage now of the comedians coming up now. Like if you can master technology and be funny.
Yeah, well, most of the new fucking comics are nerds, just like we were.
Right.
Just different generations of nerds is what it is. It's a fucking, you know. But we have access to the technology. Look, it's dangerous. We got a fucking pirate radio station, motherfucker.
And it didn't cost us anything. Yeah. Right, exactly. We used to have to get a tower and some ham radios that cost a lot of money.
That's right.
Be on a boat.
Someone had to stand with foil a certain angle.
This shit could be done like right here and then uploaded.
Yeah. And so that's what I said. So that's the beauty. That's the beautiful part of it. But I have very strong opinions on. And you know what? I never thought about it until, like I said, when you are considered. Okay, let me ask you this. When do you think you considered yourself a true headliner in the sense of a headline? I don't care about credits. I'm talking about what you did on stage from the time you got on stage to the time you got off. How many years were you in?
10. Oh. Well, dude, all along I thought, oh, I got it. And then a year later, I'm like, oh, shit, I'm better now. And then lately, I'm realized, oh, that you can learn all the way through. Right. But to just be able to be whatever I want to be on stage, probably 10 years.
Right. Hannigan, probably what you say?
I haven't really attained it. You know, I mean,
Hannigan's always wandered up.
I can close the show, but I really think, you know, an hour of material, I don't think I'm ever going to get an hour.
An hour that you're cool with.
He's done an hour, though. I've seen him do an hour.
I think I got a strong 45, and then I got some meandering for 15 minutes.
You can
and it always seems like 20 years later, I still have 45 strong and 15 weak. And it's
that last 15 is a bitch, man.
Part of the problem is because he makes shit up the whole.
That's what I'm saying. Because I forgot who asked me this question, man. I always forget whoever asked me this. But it's such a good story, man, because it really showed me what I had to look at as far as being considered a headliner.
You have to be Chris Rock. That's a headliner. The actual terminology that really.
And why do you say Chris Rock?
Well, dude, any of these guys that are a headliner means that you're selling out theaters and you're doing freaking stadiums and shit. Like Frank Sinatra would be a headliner. There was a show on A&E called Headliners, and who they put in there was
well, to
big
me,
dudes.
A headliner is somebody
but
who's a draw.
There's closer or the guy that's selling the tickets. Yeah,
sure.
But I mean, you got to. I mean, you actually have to have some draw. But there's guys. There's a lot of dudes that are phenomenal and can close a show and can crush.
But okay, so that's what I'm saying. Because I mean, if we're going off of the sense of it's whoever can sell tickets. It's a bunch of people that can sell tickets.
Yeah.
But when you ask them to do 45 minutes of strong material, they can't. So by definition of the word headliner,
but here's what
this
sucks.
Person that does 45 minutes strong.
Well, you know what? I kind of have, and I don't want to mention any names, but I've noticed kind of a new phenomenon, too, that you just reminded me of, where there's a lot of, like, character actors and people who aren't really comics,
right,
but they're
right.
just kind
of
like
dude,
fame.
You're gonna
and
do
then the
some
next
of
thing
that,
you
guess.
Know, they're selling out. They're well, maybe not even selling out, but they're going to comedy clubs. Like all of a sudden, they're stand-up
Steve-O
comics.
Is headlining,
you know?
Right.
Yeah, you know, and it's like
yeah,
all
and he's
these
a draw.
All these comics
sell tickets.
Well, that's the thing. All these comics who are coming up and whatever, they can't get any fucking stage time because like this dude who's got like 10
dude,
B-rolls
really
and six
is about revenue
movies.
Because I know a venue that has to pay like. Many six figures in rent. They have to fucking sell tickets,
right?
So there, it's a huge balance. Like the only place you could get a true like full on show that just never promoted properly is the underground because right. the overhead isn't so fucking crazy.
Well, but then the problem is nobody like no big draw wants to come there because they can only draw like a few hundred people, right?
But still, so dude, you've got these mid level guys that if people knew that every time they went in there, every fucking show was phenomenal. And it was maybe the writer off of Conan that might come in for $2,000 for the weekend, which they'll never. They don't have a budget even close to that. But if you could get a guy like that every week, and everybody knew that when they went to the underground, the shows were fucking good, and everything was phenomenal and right. marketed well, dude, they'd make a killing. Because dude, everybody knows that some of those actors are shitty, but that's what they have to go see.
But so, I mean, but some people do that and they can back it up. Like I've seen. Who's a good example
Please
of that?
Give me a good example.
Steve Ranazzisi is a phenomenal actor as well.
And he's very funny, too. Steve is funny. Brad Garrett. Brad Garrett is funny as fuck on stage. He, you know, he's a little loopy a little bit, but he's funny. Kevin Nealon. Another
Kevin's
character.
Funny.
Kevin.
For some reason, you know I always thought of him as a stand. Didn't he do stand up like a long time ago?
Yeah,
too?
But see, like, but he blew up on Saturday Night Live, so you never really got to know him like that. But he when he comes to the club, he has a notebook and he's working on jokes and shit.
Yeah, he always struck me as like a vet comic. Like,
what's
I never
his name? David Koechner. I like that guy, Who's that? I couldn't stay in the room. He's the dude that plays on Anchorman. The guy with the cowboy
hat.
He's been doing comedy for a year. He stands in the green room literally shaking. He's like scared to even be up there.
Yeah.
He's just there getting money.
I love David Koechner. He's a great guy. He's
a good
friend. It was
did you see it?
Anchorman?
No, did you see a stand-up?
I did the guest spots for that weekend.
I had to leave the room.
It was that bad?
Well, I kept hearing, like, and I could tell just by his demeanor, like, he was nervous because there was other comics that were obviously going to crush him, and he just knew by the way they were talking, not like they were bragging or anything, he could just tell they were experienced.
Well, again,
he was asking questions and shit.
Well, this is the thing, like, I had a blast with him, he's the nicest guy I've ever met.
Oh, he's totally cool.
We hung
like,
out.
He's not a dick.
And he was humble about the situation, and, you know, I mean, he came in there and, you know, he was, hey, does anybody got 45 minutes for sale? You know, just kind of like riffing like that. And we had a great time. But, you know, kind of it was I had an experience with those guys that was kind of related to this whole weird marketing and the mentality that goes behind it and selling merch and whatever. Sully McCullough was the opener, right?
Yeah, I like Sully. He's funny, too.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. He's got a couple movie credits and stuff. I hadn't seen him until then. And he went up, he crushed it. He was great, of course. And he had some merchandise. He had, like, some T-shirts and stuff. And so the parlor wasn't really prepared for that. And they said, well, just, like, when we do the meet and greet, we'll put a little table over here. You can put your shirts on it and then, you know, whatever. So, of course, it was just a brief matter of time before a beer got spilled on one of these shirts. And so afterwards, Koechner and Sully and myself were hanging out, and, like, Sully's, like, really kind of bummed that his shirt got ruined and, like, oh, I paid money for that now, blah, blah, blah. And I said, why don't you just, like, tell everybody that, you know, the great David Koechner spilled a beer on that shirt, and, you know, that gives it some value. And so Dave was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And he took a Sharpie out, and he wrote, like, I, David Koechner, spilled a beer on this shirt and drew a little arrow to the beer stain. So the next night they go out there, and Big J was the MC. And he says, hey, after the show, you know, if anybody wants any shirts, Sully's got some shirts. You can get the regular shirts for $15, or you can get the beer-stained Dave Koechner shirt for $25.
Oh, that's people bought them because
So afterwards at the meet and greet, these two dudes made a beeline to the table. Like, they literally, like, ran over there to pay the $25 for the beer-stained.
He's a TV character. He's an anchorman dude. Wow. He's the dude. That's why I didn't want to watch it, because I didn't want to, like, be disappointed and, like...
I love Dave. Dave was a great judge guy. Judge that dude. He was a great...
How's Rob Schneider on stage?
He's all right.
Yeah.
He's all right. He does all right. I'm not going to say it sucks. You know who came in? Who's married to Mariah Carey? What's his name?
Oh, Nick Cannon.
Nick Cannon came in, and I brought the show in. I was a little bit concerned, but he was cheap. And I'm like, well, fuck, it'll sell tickets.
I heard a lot of his stuff.
How's his material?
It's all right. He's
not bad. I heard a lot of it was about being married to Mariah Carey.
But he's not amazing at any one thing. He's okay at everything.
Yeah.
So he goes in there, and he did a respectable job.
He was like a dancer or a rapper. They didn't hate him. He didn't suck. Didn't he do all these things?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he even did a special, and he was, like, working on his special when he was up here. And the special did decent.
Was it a Comedy Central special?
I don't love it, but I don't hate it either. It's not bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is he did a respectable job. There is a place for that shit.
I miss Roger Ebert and guy.
No, because in listening to what you're saying about those two comedians, and I think this is probably the issue with at least how I feel about stand-up, and I think it's probably I got to change my views on some shit because, you know, you said they're all right. They're all right. And I'm like...
Well, they're not amazing, dude, but they right, don't but suck.
So let me ask you this.
That fan does not suck.
Let me ask you this. So what do you think? You think of Pryor. What do you think of Pryor?
Phenomenal,
right? See, it wasn't
it's
like...
It's not that level. I'm not saying that.
But that's what I'm saying is that I wonder how many people... How many comedians strive to be better than...
Yeah, you don't want to be all right.
Just all right.
Probably
you know
some of these guys
not can enough. Only... Not enough of them.
Well, but you know what? And here's the thing.
You know what I'm saying? You always got to have the safe guy, though, because I'm not going
to
be able to
fill
that
but
spot.
The other side to that, too, is like we were talking about Koechner earlier. I mean, he was completely aware of what was going on. And when I was talking to him about it, he was like, look, I got 5 kids and live in L.A. So, you know, here I am. I audition. I try to go get parts. And if I don't
get
parts, here I am. And I'm getting paid, you know. And it was just kind of that simple, which, you know, it's kind of deflating from the perspective of somebody who's like,
hey. But you can't get mad at. That's reality. That's life.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. I don't hate the guy, you know.
And that's why I told people, man, go get your money. Take whatever opportunity they give you. I mean, take it. That's what it is. It's the business. But I'm saying the issue sometimes comes that people are equating numbers with results, and that's not always the case. And I think that's the thing that I've been trying to say
is that. What do you mean by numbers with results?
Well, when they say, okay, the place is packed. How did they do? They were okay. That to me is like, I'd rather hear the place was packed and they crushed.
But they're never, you know why they're never going to tell you that? This is why, because then they have to pay you more next time. They're never going to tell you how awesome it was. They're never going to play their card because they don't want to have to pay you more and more.
No. I'm talking about you can hear when you're funny and whether you're laughing.
You know exactly how you do.
Ha 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 ha. You know the difference in the laughs. You can hear it. Mm-hmm. And like I said, people when they come up to you and they say, and then there's people that come up to you after the show, okay, it was fine. And all I'm saying, again, I don't want people to take this the wrong way. Those people do stay in your lane, do exactly that because that is what is working for you. Motherfuckers give me money. I'll do a show at a Klan rally. You give me your fucking money. I don't give a fuck. So I want to make that clear. I'm not telling these people not to get their money. I'm saying.
Is anybody out there in the Klan listening, by the way?
Look, the phone lines are lit up. But I'm saying is when people.
Line 3.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like when people. I'm wondering how many people. And that was just more of a regular question. Like how many comedians do you think exist now that want to be. Awesome.
I think they all want to be awesome, but at some point you have to just deal with the reality that you're given. You're just going
to
get to this level.
I don't think you ever deal with it. I think you either, if you came face to face and went, you know, I'm just going to be a mediocre comic, oof, you would quit.
Obviously, yeah, but that's the thing. Is there's different
the dream is over. You're, but there's different, it's done.
There's different sensibilities in comedy. Stuff that you think is funny may not be something I think is funny, may not be something he thinks
is
funny.
Yeah, but you got to find something. But we're, some
not,
always,
but we're not. I'm not going. We're not going by your view. Like you're not going by mine. Like we're
going
not
going by the audience.
I'm going by the audience. I'm going by right, what right. you hear. If either people are ha 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 ha, or guys, they're like, eh, okay.
But there's sometimes like Daryl Lennox to me doesn't get huge laughs, but I love listening to him because I think he's an amazing speaker. I think of him as more of like this guy is a storyteller that's awesome to listen to. And I'm not saying that in any kind of an insult.
No,
I think
no,
it's
no,
awesome.
No, no.
I'm
but,
saying
but
it
see,
like
it's,
I love listening to this guy just like I'd listen to Garrison Keillor or somebody. Like he's soothing. And his cadence right. is good, and he has that awesome points.
Well, a lot of
some people are good at slam dunks. Some people are good at 3-point shots.
Right,
you know, that's kind of how it is in comedy.
That's the thing. Like you look at,
yeah, I think
yeah.
so.
It's a metaphor.
That's the thing. Like
have
you look
a freaking team, dude.
I look at Daryl, and I'm telling you, Daryl to me, like I always think about this every time I see him perform. I have never, ever seen Daryl bomb. Like I've seen him have moments where he says it's a long pause, but every time I watch Daryl, I'm like,
oh, he won't
that
bomb
motherfucker
because
is,
dude,
awesome.
Everybody's gonna listen to that dude in about 2 seconds. Did you ever see that comic that's on tape? I think it was some kind of a after show series that they did, and they go in and film it, and the comic would talk about something real that happened to him, and he talks about how he's coming up in the business, and as he's doing it, his daughter's dying of cancer, and then the night he had to go up on the TV show. It's pretty incredible because it's just an actual piece.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, he talks about shit that's real.
Right.
Have you heard Stanhope's piece about his mom?
Mm-mm.
You haven't heard? Like, I don't want to, like, take this to a dark place. I kind of did earlier, I guess. But Stanhope assisted his mom's death. Like, she was terminal, and they went to, and they consulted a doctor, and they got a lot of pills, and he, like, sat there with her, like, the whole night. And she OD'd, and it was intentional, you know, and they did the whole thing. And he talks about it on stage. And he went up at Carolyn's Comedy Club on Mother's Day and opened with that bit, with that whole, like, on Mother's Day. Like, and, of course, people were like, not going. And he's just, again, he's fearless. He just has his thing.
Both of the stories, the long stories you have said, have been fucking depressing.
Yeah, huh?
First it was the fucking All in the Family rape.
Yeah.
You see why we got him here as a sound guy.
We just sit like, back.
He's good with little knobs.
Dude, he just moved over. He just moved over from the island. He doesn't have to take
the
ferry
eyes
anymore.
He's
working out some anger.
Hey, man.
We know why you were on the island.
Say what you want, but you guys are going to be thinking about that for a while, man.
Damn.
I mean, that's intense, man.
That's probably a good place to end this. I think we've been going for more than 45 minutes. We should start ending song with the guitar
we're like
shit.
We're like 90 in.
We should.
A little outro music.
I think we talked about a lot of shit.
Any last thoughts, Ty? Any other things you want to plug?
The special's coming up. I've shoot it August 2nd. I got a thing I did for Nickelodeon called Nick Mom's Night Out, so I'll let you guys know.
How'd you get on the Nick Mom's?
You know, man, you know what? It was very by happen chance.
They didn't have enough girls.
No. It was dudes on the show too, but it's Nickelodeon's comedy show thing.
Right.
But it's supposed to be like moms have a whole rough day, so this is their night out at the club. So it's a setting of a comedy. It's a comedy show. And but I was in New York. I was there doing a college, and I was staying in New York for a couple of days, just hanging out. I called up a friend of mine, and I said, "Hey, I'm looking for stage time. I'm in town for a couple of days," and he was like, "Yo, you'd be perfect for this TV show. So let me see if I can get you on." And he called me back like about 40 minutes later and was like, "You're in." I was like,
"That's a good friend to have right there."
Yeah. So that's how I got the gig. And, you know, it airs. It's a network show. It helps me with my SAG writing.
Is it on there? How many did you do?
I just did one. Just did one episode. Yeah.
Did you ever do Comics Unleashed?
Yeah.
I got rescheduled twice and then never ended up doing it.
Coming up, Comics Unleashed.
It actually is better than
Byron Allen.
Comedy.tv or whatever it is now. I think it was better than.
Yeah, the thing about that show, man, you're talking about a smart cat.
He's making some money. He's driving Bentleys.
That dude is fucking smart as fuck. But yeah, so I got that coming up. The website is it's tybarnett.net. I'm on Twitter now. I mean, I know everybody is, but tbarnett23 is the Twitter name. And wow.
23.
Yeah.
So there's 22 other motherfuckers. Is that
many Ty Barnetts? You're well, the 23rd. There could be a Tom Barnett.
Actually, because I went to.
You should probably start the music.
I actually wanted to put Ty Barnett.
To just keep talking.
I wanted to put Ty Barnett, but it was it's a boxer named Ty Barnett who
already
well,
had.
Well, he and you know he speaking of how many.
I assume the 23 is a Jordan reference. That's what I want.
We're gonna turn the music on before Joe goes into some other depressing story.
We have to end it.
I'm gonna go home and just slash
a bus full of kittens.
91 degrees in Seattle, July 1st,
2013. Life, man, you guys just can't handle the truth, man. That's
we can't. That's why we're comedians.
Hilarious. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Yeah,
I appreciate
for coming,
it.
Thanks
for
coming,
Thank you so much. It's great.